Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the September workshop session of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. Would you please rise and say the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A couple of quick announcements before we start. The microphones are very sensitive, so if you don't want somebody to hear something, I would suggest you don't say it in that regard. Number two, we have a relatively short workshop this morning, and then we'll be leaving this about 10 o'clock or so to go out to the smart roads to get in touch to see those technologies. But even though it's short, we have a couple of very important things to talk about. And what I plan to do is, after the presentations, is we can continue this at the track to smaller discussions, just go through really what we're trying to accomplish with House Bill 2 and talk about some particular projects, because this is a transition, period. Going from the way we did it to where we're going, there has to be some judgments made, and we'll talk about those as we go through. So when you finally vote, you'll have hopefully the same information that we have had over the last few months getting this information together and making the decisions as to how we would recommend that we move forward with House Bill 2. So, with that, is there, first of all, I welcome everybody. I see most of you had a great dinner. Thanks to our host, Mr. Fralin, last evening. It was a nice time. And we look to replicate that this evening, wherever we are. But it was a great time last evening, so appreciate that. And then, of course, tomorrow, after our formal session, we'll get into working with Mr. Brule on allocations related to some other projects across the college. Okay, with that, we'll start our work session, and I guess we have Laura. Good morning. Good to see you today.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Laura Farmer. I'm the Director of Financial Planning Division at VDOT. We're a component of the Chief Financial Officer Directorate. This morning, I'm going to give you an overview of the proposed adjustments to the 15 through 20 six-year improvement program, the Commonwealth Transportation Fund budget, and the VDOT budget. Since House Bill 2313 was passed in 2013, which is about 18 months ago from where we are right now, our revenue forecast updates and the actions that have been associated with the biennial budget have resulted in a loss of just over $1 billion to transportation. The majority of that impact has been felt by highway construction and the mass transit programs. While most of the revenue reductions were applied to the Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund, our crossover has increased to ensure that we maintain our funding for the maintenance program. We've also implemented some agency actions to reduce the impact on core programs internally, and I'll get into a little bit more detail about that later.
Yes. Is that $1.2 billion for the whole six-year program?
Yes, sir. Including from the revenues updates we got last December, that is including fiscal year 14 all the way through fiscal year 20.
Our revenues, like the general fund, have been declining, at least the projections, I won't say revenues, because the actual revenues are higher because obviously we passed 2013, but the projections of what we hoped would happen continue to decline. Initially, it was the price of gasoline. Most recently, it is economic activity related to reduced vehicle sales, and we'll go through here. And I wanted, you mentioned about crossover. At this level of funding, it's important to note crossover does not go away. Ever. I mean, so in other words, we would hope with 2313, after about 3 years, 4 years with the increased activity and the higher base, our projections showed the crossover disappearing.
current level, that will not be the case. And that's one thing we'll need to consider as we, getting monies back to localities. That impacts that formula with our CPE form and stuff, he's saying. So that's really a significant hit to going forward, because crossover does not disappear.
So. Thank you. The result of our actions today in terms of what we need to embed in the new six-year improvement program and the associated budgets is $129 million that affects the formula, the amount that's available for distribution through the CTV formula. Of that amount, $95 million is in the current fiscal year. I'd like to talk briefly about the factors that require this update. In June, you adopted our six-year financial plan, the Commonwealth Transportation Fund budget, the DRPT budget, and the VDOT budget, were all based on assumptions that we knew about mid-June. Well, in late June, the governor and the General Assembly finalized the biennial budget. We had incorporated some pending items that we thought may impact transportation at the time. We also experienced some unknown items that came about through the waning days of that development process and are now incorporating those. So the largest items that impact transportation from the biennial budget are enumerated on this slide. The General Assembly has asked that $30 million be transferred from the HMOF to the general fund in the current fiscal year, and they plan on returning that in next year. So we are counting on that for the time being. There is a transfer to the general fund of transportation trust fund dollars in the amount of $1 million. We are providing some additional support to the Commercial Space Flight Authority for the unmanned aircraft system test range of $5.8 million in the first year, and some planning and preliminary engineering work for dredging the Norfolk Harbor Channel for the Port Authority in each fiscal year. So the combined impact of these four actions is a $70 million reduction in the first year, with about $27 million of that returning in the second, for a total impact of a loss of $43 million.
This does not include any adjustments that may come out of the budget that the governor and the speaker announced yesterday. So there could be additional items for us to consider when that is adopted. In fact, as it stands today, there'll be a significant couple of items we'll have to consider. We don't know exactly how the net's going to work. But one of the things that they are looking at is delaying the increase. Remember, 2313 had an increase in the amount of sales tax, the general fund, that was transferred to transportation. That has been delayed at least a year. Now, we don't know if we have some other things coming back the other way, some different things, but we know that is going to be part of the cycle. So we'll have to, maybe next time, give you another update on some other adjustments.
Mr. Chairman, so we got a decrease in revenue, so we're going to decrease revenue further. I understand that.
We had a decrease on our revenues. The general fund also is looking to plug about an $900 million budget. Okay. And so the general fund, part of our revenues come from the general fund, the sales tax.
Right, I understand that.
And so they have, in 2313, moved it up. I don't have the exact numbers, but it was, I think, an 8.075%, I believe, in increments going up to get us to a higher level coming from the general fund. They have delayed that. In our projections, we had put in there that we would be getting these additional monies.
So they're not delaying the tax increase schedule to take place.
No, they're just delaying.
They're taking the money.
They're taking the money. That's right. They're not giving it to us.
In addition to the $60 million, they've already taken 1 year after the tax increase went into place.
That is correct.
That's what I understand.
If I could just clarify, the tax increase for January 1st is fuel tax on gasoline.
Right.
The transfer that the secretary is referring to is the sales tax,
sales
retail
tax
transfer for what was committed to the general fund that was expected to come to transportation.
Well, I'm not sure I understand. when we charge that.
Sure.
If the internet sales tax did not take place in Congress, that the wholesale tax on gasoline was to go up a certain amount.
That's right. But that's not a part of our issue. We never projected.
So they give us that to take it somewhere else.
We never projected any increased revenues for marketplace equity.
Okay.
Now, to replace what they were anticipating with that, they increased about 40% the wholesale sales tax on gasoline on that. So, but that's non-general fund revenues that we collect. Those projections are not a result of the Marketplace Equity Act. It's simply a result of price of gasoline being down and economic activity. So that's the biggest part of this $1 billion. It's nothing to do. If we had got the Marketplace Equity Act, we may have had a few more revenues, but we never projected we would get it done. So in our projections, we didn't do that. But in addition to that, there's a part of the sales tax on, as Laura was pointing out, on general goods, that we get a small percentage. That's right. And that was anticipated to increase to give the money to us. The tax increase, they're just not giving the money to us for it.
Gotcha. Secretary?
Yeah.
So the bottom line to this board, though, is that there's still a finite amount of dollars that we're going to get, but it's fluid, and we have to just deal with the cards that we're dealt. I mean, we can't. The general economic picture, there's nothing this board can get involved in. We can just do with what the monies are given to us at that point. That's what we're faced with.
Yeah, we some of these transfers we did not support during the process, but they were approved anyway in that regard. So, but the general decline in revenues is a result of economic activity that, there's no control. Now, I will say this, not trying to be a total pessimist, but that the general fund level, the economists are saying this year will probably be the best of the next three or four. So they're indicating that they expect that there could be future reductions related to, even though they put them in there, but related to the sequester. Most of the general fund revenues are a direct result of reduced defense spending in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads. And I suspect we're feeling the spinoff from that coming down because of car sales and economic development activity around that.
Yeah, the diversion is one thing. I mean, the lessening in the revenue is one thing, based on the economy. We can't all that says that. How the diversion on top of it, which is always what made it so hard for us to raise taxes on gasoline for transportation. They're just going to take it out of general fund. That's exactly what they did the first time out of the chute. And so now you not only have to worry about the deduction, you're going to have to somewhere in your mind calculate the likelihood of a diversion like this. Next year is going to be worse than this year. Why in the world are they going to not continue this diversion, perhaps divert it?
They give you no guarantee that they won't.
Exactly. I mean, we've talked about the forecast, and that's a tough one.
I know administration did not support some of these transport, but it was
so to step further into the impacts of transportation, on August 15th, the governor provided an update on the Commonwealth's revenue to the Joint Money Committee. There were also related updates to transportation revenues at that time. Those ranged from a low of 0.4% in fiscal year 18 to a high of 3.3% in 15, and these represented reductions to funding available. They're also in addition to reductions that we've already talked to you about in previous meetings and what you considered in your six-year improvement program that was adopted in June that included almost $800 million in state revenue and $123 million in federal revenue that were lost, and those items were considered in the previous program that you adopted. These adjustments also impact all 6 years of our financial plan, and they necessitate revisions to our budgets, particularly because there's so much of a reduction in the current fiscal year that we need to deal with it now. So the combined reductions of the biennial budget items that I enumerated earlier, those four items that came out of the biennial budget, as well as these August revenue updates, range from a low of 0.4% in 18 to a high of 5.6% loss in fiscal year 15. I'd just like to highlight some of the major changes in the updates that we received. The leader being license fees, a loss of $61 million. Much of this was anticipated because the hybrid creep went away last session, followed by the motor vehicle sales and use tax. There are some substantial reductions in the first 2 years for a total of $59 million over the six-year window, followed by recreation taxes, a reduction of about $46 million. This area primarily impacts DRPT, and Steve may touch on that a little later. So in summary, the total impact is just shy of $167 million over the 6 years, and it also provides the impact by funds, the maintenance fund, as well as the transportation trust fund. In addition, we saw some increases in the funding available for insurance premiums. Those funds are dedicated to the Priority Transportation Fund and are used for debt service, primarily on our CPR lines today. I'd also like to note that the regional revenues for Hampton Roads and Northern Virginia, those estimates were not updated in this August update we were provided, so we do expect those to be updated in December. So the impact by agency. Of the $43 million I talked on briefly about for the biennial budget, as well as the August revenue updates of $167, the total impact is just shy of $210 million. The pie chart just demonstrates the share in terms of who those reductions belong to, with VDOT and DRPT having the brunt of those reductions.
One thing I want to point out from this slide, and it shows it very well, that the reductions are largely called front-loaded. You're seeing the greatest reductions in the earlier parts of the six-year plan. Conversely, House Bill 2313 was this ramp up that the revenue started low and and would rise over the preceding 6 years. You have these things kind of working against each other. You started out with low revenues that were growing, and in this case, we're taking the biggest hit to the program early on now. Laura and John, her folks, have been doing a lot of hard work balancing and making things, moving things around, as well as the programming staff. But it's important to note that this $209 million, you see that well over half is in the first year.
Yes, just one quick one. It'd be interesting, maybe somebody can run the number, see if we had not had 2313. Where would we be?
Yeah, we'd be a lot worse off.
And we'd be interested to see exactly what that impact is.
But two things to Charlie's comments. One is that the likelihood of revisions in future years, if the trend continues, is obviously high. Because I suspect the initial projections, what we don't suspect, we now know, were unrealistically high of local money. So, the second is, and we're going to get to that in the next presentation, this directly impacts the monies available for House Bill 2, the prioritization process. And we'll get into that because, you know, those are the monies that would go into this, and if they're reduced because of the transition we're in the early years, I mean, those monies are obligated. So the point is that virtually we're getting to the point, if there are new projects, there will be, that means something has to come off another project. There is, you know, our capacity pretty much is used up. And what I've been saying a lot in the last few months, the only real monies left to make significant decisions are in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads, in the regionals. Those monies.
Jeff, can I ask a question about that? I was going to wait and look at the slides and see it coming up. The Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads regional monies, is that all construction money, or is there any? Does that help us any with crossover or not?
Does not. It does not impact the state monies at all.
Is that in code, or
it's
is that in practice?
It's in law. In law, it was intended not to supplant their statewide allocation.
So as they build more pursuant to those funds, they come into the state system, but the maintenance of those is going to fall completely on the state system.
That's correct. In fact, in Hampton Roads, they can only be used for what's called regionally specific projects. In Northern Virginia, there's a couple differences. They do have transit available, and they do have a local option. Another part of the money is going directly to the localities, about 30% you have to go over there. So, but no, and that is both the way it was, that's fiercely guarded, because, in fact, that's why the monies are separated, so that that region can determine that it was not being negatively impacted because the additional monies they raised. These are additional monies in the areas. So they are fiercely, in addition to
I'm sure, but we've just established money's fungible. Taking yeah. our money from us.
They can stay what? Yeah. I will say, do you realize those monies are only raised in those regions?
I understand.
But no, Charlie's right. I mean, we continue to see the reductions in the current years, and yet the out years are still being projected at, you know, I have no confidence that we won't be back here again.
Well, in truth, it's not really true. I mean, because we don't have, the projects haven't been built yet, so the maintenance, I mean, you're talking
right.
years in the future.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
So I understand. Just so everybody knows.
Unless we do, I mean, that's the whole argument if we get into P3s about whether the concession for maintenance ought to remain with the concessionaire or with VDOT. Right. I mean, you're exactly right. Laura.
Thank you. Slide 8 just provides a preliminary snapshot of what the revenue picture looks like with these adjustments, as well as some agency actions that we've taken in order to help ensure that we have as much money going to construction and maintenance as possible. The total of the revenue reductions as well as the adjustments that we've made is a $41.7 million impact over the 6 years when compared to what you approved in June.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Sure.
This budget doesn't include, in our planning, the marketplace variance. It doesn't include the increase in the wholesale price of tax. So is that already embedded in
this
budget?
That's already embedded.
Yeah, it's not as if we could expect more money coming in.
No, what it does, it replaces, in other words.
Okay, so.
But the real hit will be to Ms. Mitchell's department, because the way the money's come through on marketplace equity, more were designated to transit. As they flow through the normal formulas, less gets allocated to transit.
And there is no replacement for that. The MFA that doesn't occur. There is a replacement for highways, but not a services for them.
We have a significant fiscal funding cliff for transit in 17 unless we're able to replace it. We're working on legislation for reauthorization of CPR bonds and different things. But that would have been a very positive thing for transit had the marketplace actually acted. You guys probably know as well, we have little chance of that passing.
Slide 9 provides you a picture of the preliminary allocations of the impacts of the revenue adjustments as well as adjustments that we've made. Highlighted are maintenance and operations, rail and public transportation, and construction. The slight change in maintenance is really just an administrative item that we set aside for potential employee benefits that did not come to fruition in the biennial budget, and so those dollars were removed. Otherwise, the maintenance has continued to be fully funded as expected.
Yes.
A question. All of us in the next 30 to 45 days are going to be having public hearings on the 6-year plan. I think it would be appropriate, and I don't know how we go about this, but to make sure that the comment from the public is aware of what we're faced with, as opposed to them coming in with a grander wish list. There needs to be a serious dose of reality. I don't know if it's the night of the meeting or we get that out through the districts and through a public awareness effort, but I think it should be done. I don't want to be sitting there on October 16th, hearing about do this and do that, and they don't know about what the reality is.
We have a press release. I've noticed there's no press here today. We're hoping there were, because we want to highlight a couple of things, but we will have a press release about the meeting, but highlighting this, and I don't know if Laura's going to get into it, but VDOT and DRPT and the transportation agencies are participating, along with other state agencies, in reducing their administrative budgets 5% this fiscal year and 7% next fiscal year. Now, in our case, that means the monies go back into programs. That money's not being going to the general fund, but we are participating in that regard. The governor ordered that all agencies be involved in the cuts. Now, in our case, again, the money stayed within the six-year plan. It's just that our administrative fees have been cut in that regard. So, but we wanted to highlight that to Mr. Krasinski with our declining revenue. Of course, as you know, many of the budgets are based on a percentage of the revenue. So their budgets go down anyway for overhead and administration, and the revenues go down. In addition to those, we're actually looking at other things to help cushion the blow of some of these monies going to the general fund.
Yes, sir. I will get into that briefly in just a little while. The impact of the current year adjustment is made in these numbers. We need a little more time to implement the 7% in 16, and we'll have those done in the 16 through 21 six-year program that you'll be considering.
All right. Secretary, is there any chance that the regional estimates could be done before December? I mean, they're in the throes of doing their own six-year plans now. I know at NBTA we are.
I understand. The Department of Taxation provides that detail to us for the state, for the regional revenues, and they'll be provided as part of the biennial budget process, and we can make those available to them in December, but I don't get any indication that tax will provide that any sooner.
Okay, thank you.
But thank you for asking.
I'd like to pick up a little bit on what Mr. Gerbinski said with regard to preparation of our public meetings. I mean, I understand there's going to be a press release with regard to administrative cuts.
But really, we need revenues too.
I think we really do need at that meeting, at the beginning of that meeting, to have a detailed explanation so that we use those public forums as a communication venue. And I think we ought to take advantage of that to try to have some dialogue with our municipalities and government to let them understand what we're dealing with.
I think we can do that, and Joy and I were just giving a letter out to all the MPOs let them know what's occurring also. And I think it's also important to get that message out, because I suspect is trailing Mr. Williams pointed out that our General Assembly friends will continue to look our way.
Attended, but I can't.
And that's why we've been pretty vocal in the budgets about taking monies. We'll work on that and come up with a presentation just to show the overall picture of what we've dealt with.
Slide 10 provides a preliminary look at the revised program budget for the Commonwealth Transportation Fund. We'll have this for your consideration at your November meeting when you are also reviewing the six-year improvement program.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question? At that meeting, one thing that might be helpful here is to show the revenue here versus the revenue we had planned on, and then the allocations here versus the allocations we had planned on. So we can see exactly what categories and where, like, for example, if this crossover in the construction is going to be hit not just by the amount of reduction, but by crossover too. So it'd be interesting to see what that $1 billion was before that.
And one other topic that we really haven't got into is that we're still dealing with the uncertainty at the federal level in terms of the trust fund there, the Federal Highway Trust Fund. We've anticipated a steady, no increase, but at least getting the same amount of revenues in the prior year going forward. But of course, we are now, we have still May, we're funded until May, but we don't know where that's going to end up either. So that's another thing, another uncertainty that we'll be dealing with as we go forward.
So to shift focus just to VDOT, we've taken some internal actions to mitigate the reductions that would be experienced in the construction program. We have released some previous committed funds. Those are balances available from FY14 that would generally be brought forward into 15 for use, the largest share being in information technology. We also applied a reduction to our admin programs in the current fiscal year based on the share of the reduction. So in construction management, which is a small component of our construction program that's used to support the administrative arm of construction, it's a 0.6% reduction, and in administration, 5.6%. The combined reductions equate to 7% in the current year, and these are also in addition to everything that we brought forward for the snow revision that we made in April of last spring. There were some significant sacrifices in order to sweep the corners and ensure that we could deploy every available resource for maintenance activities. We also reduced amounts in 15. Those reductions, as you'll see in the table at the bottom, those grow. They affect the base, and so they will affect the subsequent 5 years in the six-year window. So in total, we have identified $37.5 million over the 6 years.
So Laura, what do we have, maybe Charlie, a question for you. What do we have in this fiscal year for snow? What have we budgeted? We spent $350 last year. What have we budgeted this year?
Or maybe, you know, I thought it was approximately $150, and I see the chief engineer's back there somewhere. That about right?
I don't have the exact number. Off the top of my head, it's $157, $160.
Okay. So, the weather forecast is to have a similar winter this year as last year, in the long-range forecast. So we also could be looking at, you know, another significant amount of money being hit for snow over and above our budget.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the things we talked about last year was trying to, I guess one day we're going to find that unicorn day when we've got plenty of money and we're not have to worry about this. But we ought to be banking some of that money so that we smooth the, in my opinion, so that we smooth those peaks and valleys out. I understand that was done before, and previous boards and administrations decided that they were in a tough spot and wanted to spend every nickel to get their hands on, which I understand, because I think we might be in a situation.
A lot of danger in making money.
But,
We sort of do that, and I'll let Charlie explain how
we do
it.
We do, one of the things that that Garrett and his team have been working on is trying to, pull back on some potential maintenance-related projects until we get a better view of things around February. By February, you get a pretty good picture. Even if you get a big storm in late February into March, it goes away pretty quick. So we're looking at the potential of holding some work, taking a look. If things look okay in terms of expenditure, then we can put out contracts in February, which gets them folks underway in April, May, you know, for construction timing. It's that it's sort of that balance, though, of you don't want to have too much built up because it, you know, then folks say, well, you're not using your money. So it's a constant juggle that we're doing, and where we can do this mostly is in contracts that are pretty quick to turn around pavement and bridge contracts where we already have the bridge work design that we can turn pretty quickly. So that's what we've been working on internally.
So we have a reserve that's notated that these projects won't be let until we know, you know, where we're headed. So because we thought about that, trailing about putting a reserve, but the problem is with everybody going through looking at our money, we were afraid that would make it easier to
target.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's right. So. Okay.
So as the Secretary mentioned earlier, I'd like to briefly address crossover so that you understand the changes that we've experienced and what crossover was expected to be. before House Bill 2313 in the program that was 13 through fiscal year 18, crossover was well over $450 million by the end of the six-year window. Stepping forward to that, after House Bill 2313 was implemented and the revenues that we expected, crossover would continue through the first 3 years of the program, but was expected to be eliminated by fiscal years 17, 18, and 19. Long-term projections, however, it did come back, but it did not come back very quickly. In the program that you adopted this past June, as well as with the December 13 revenue updates, the last time we'd gotten state revenue projections, crossover was greater and returned and never went away again. And with the current adjustments that we've made, because we deployed some additional federal resources in the maintenance program, crossover does dip slightly in the first year. However, it returns, and now it's slightly more than it was projected to be in June.
So what, and I think folks understand the term crossover, very fundamentally we're taking funds from the Transportation Trust Fund, the construction side, we're transferring them to the maintenance side, and we grow maintenance each year at the PPI.
Yes, sir.
So that's the rate of inflation that we apply to the maintenance program each year. Now that doesn't really talk, in future meetings we'll talk to you about infrastructure preservation and some of the needs that we have, calling infrastructure preservation or capital replacement, not capacity improvement, but replacing the core system. And we'll be talking in future meetings about some of the steps that we're taking to ensure that we're not seeing that cliff either. In other words, we're not rejuvenating and bringing and extending the life of our, we have to extend the life of our facilities. We'll be talking about that in the future. But again, what this does is, as Laura said, crossover does not go away. It's not projected to ever go away at this point because of the ongoing maintenance needs.
PPI is pretty low. So you can see our revenues are what the issue is. And to Mr. Frelick's point, if we continue to add to the network, that will increase the burden on the maintenance.
So after we consider what we've done internally at VDOT, to summarize, the impact of VDOT over the 6 years is $167 million, of which 118 or so is in fiscal year 15, the current year that we're in today. With the actions that we took internally to mitigate those reductions, we were able to find $37.5 million over the 6 years, about 23 of that being in year one. So the impact to what's available for the CTV alternative formula for distribution and construction is $129.5 million over the 6 years, the greatest impact being in the current year, just over $95 million. The table at the bottom of the slide just summarizes what those dollars look like in June when you adopted the six-year program, the reductions across the 6 years, and then the total of what's still continuing to be available for distribution. And you can see the largest impact, of course, is in year one, and the impacts are smaller in the out years. And this last slide just gives you a preliminary outlook of what our VDOT budget will look like with the impacts as I've described them today, and the total reduction across all programs from an allocation perspective is $66 million. And I'll be happy to take any additional questions.
And at the bottom, the increase in support to other state agencies, that was actually the $30 million transfer.
Yes, sir.
That you talked about at the very beginning.
That is the transfer.
So that's why it shows we're increasing the support to other agencies. That was the budget action that occurred a couple months ago.
Yes. This is not being confused with the earlier 4.8. It looks like we're
4.8. Oh, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, this goes back to Mr. Kavinsky's earlier point. In addition to what they're suggesting, I think we have to have a remedial sort of program to educate our constituents about HB 2313 and the various revenue sources that support it, and how identifying revenues from the county and actually the alternative effective. I mean, if repealing the hybrid tax can take us down $51 million, I guarantee you, these two gentlemen can speak more expertly than I can. There's going to be, I imagine, a bill in the next session that's going to repeal the gas tax or the land tax. I think this is going to probably have some support. And they may have a very good chance of passing. I just think we need to educate people on it. Because what I'm hearing in my district, I think they're bothering on the ballot. And people are saying, I'm not going to vote for it. 2313 took care of transportation. And even if on probably as best as 2313 didn't take care of all our funding. And so now, I think they're going to have this mixed message. And be very angry when some of these projects aren't even funded. So I like to take us back a little bit further. I want to have an editorial board in my area to explain to them in a flat-footed, apolitical way how 2313 works. And some of the actions in the fresh field. Because we just need to go back and educate people about how transportation works and how transportation funding works in the state of Virginia. Not only that,
been on the board 5 years, and if you're successful in that, we'll support you. I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I think it is really a matter of people are paying more taxes. That's what it is. I have found that we have done that extensively, and we'll continue to do it. Like I say, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but all they know is that they are paying more taxes. And I made the mistake several times of thinking if I just explained this, people would understand. And so I'm with you. I'm all about that. I'll do it. But I think we've got a very big job ahead of us.
Oh, I don't disagree. I think it's continuous effort. Yeah. I don't even quit. But I do think that, you know, people are going to have to realize that, you know, what the state of reality is. As far as transportation is concerned. And, you know, quite frankly, if we want to do something in our area, we got toll road authority, passed in the Bureau of Assembly a couple of years ago, long, we might want to dust that off. I don't know. We might want to look at other ways to fix our district problem, our regional problem, rather than waiting for Richmond to fix it. That ain't going to happen.
I think that is the message, is that and Northern Virginia seems to be further ahead as localities planning in their budgets for transportation. I think that's really the message. Because either at the federal or state level, I don't see any more increases in transportation at the state level for a long time. And I do believe we'll continue to get pressure to limit the amount that's going over. So, We will get this out. We hear you loud and clear. We have been doing that. Nick Donahue's in the back. I know he's met many times with legislators explaining them, particularly in the impact of House Bill 2. But if we get into that presentation, you're going to see there's not a whole lot of money's left for that. Because that's what they are under the impression. Oh, gosh, you know, when all these projects were promised to get the votes done. And so there's a perception out there, you know, that all these projects are going to be flowing through and all this money's coming. And at its best day, it was going to be revenue neutral at the state level. And it's, you know, at the regional level, that's where the big two, you know, North Virginia Hampton Roads, that's really, you look at House Bill 2313, that's where the only increase has really been. Statewide revenues are about even with where they would have been. Particularly now with these reductions.
Chairman, taking what Ep was saying a step further, some of the other boards that I've been on, those are leadership positions, and I would classify all of our at-large and district representatives in that case. It might be beneficial for us to have talking points, and they could be tailored to district, but general talking points about what's just happened. So that we're all singing from the same song, telling the same story
of how these cuts and reductions in revenue have impacted us and where they are. I found that in the past to be very, very useful, as a speaking from a leadership position, to have those talking points, and they're kind of unified across the CTP. I know. I personally would be.
Well,
we'd like to see.
We can get that. We'll get them worked out.
Secretary, I'm assuming that the Crosswell says that the crossover calculations are using the same revenue updates that we talked about earlier in your presentation.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
But it would it be fair to classify that as kind of a best case scenario, those forecasts?
Based on where we've been going, I don't see them. Well, I'll let you act, but I don't see we're going to get an estimate that's going to increase revenues.
And understanding that, has anyone taken a look to say where is the crossover likely to be if it's a more realistic picture? Just trying to understand based on where we have been in the 2013 to 2018.
Sure. It's important to point out in this August update that we got from the Department of Taxation, they did not touch fuel tax estimates. And recent activity leads, and I just reviewed August activity this morning, and fuel tax estimates, the collections are down. Whether we see that in the December update or not has yet to be determined. We haven't made our own assumptions about where state revenue is going to determine what crossover would look like later on. We generally just rely on the taxation estimate and try to balance the books as best as possible.
So we could, except politically, puts VDOT in a pretty tough situation if you say we don't believe what the taxation are telling us.
Yes, sir.
Although I will tell you, since being here from June to August of this year, taxation estimates on withholdings were off $500 million. In June, they were projecting $500 million more than we actually ended up getting, because they based them on withholdings on last year's withholdings, which saw $500 million increase go up. Why? Because of the increased tax at the federal level. People sold their businesses, and those withholdings that came due this time a year ago were being paid. Now, why we would ever base our future on that one anomaly going forward, that's another question we have to ask taxation. But now we've reverted back to where we were before everybody took that action to offset what was anticipated with the capital gain taxes going up. So, Roger, I agree with anybody that would have thought that would have been a sustainable level. How politics get involved in those estimates, and I don't know how that all works.
I've been looking for the $95 million that you had in your highlights. Could you identify exactly where is that in the numbers that we see at the end of the day?
On slide 13, in the table at the top, the impact of VDOT in the first year is just shy of $118 million.
That's the 95.
Yes, sir. Once we identify the 22.6, then the 95.4 is the first year impact.
But in the next slide, we are showing a decrease of $66 million.
Yes, sir. That's based on some ins and outs. So I highlight the third row into the VDOT programs, highway system acquisition and construction. The $95.4 million is a component of that $100.8 million. The remaining difference is a accounts receivable revenue that we were expecting from the Port Authority related to the Route 460 project. And there, because TTF revenues came down slightly, then the commitment from the Port Authority comes down slightly as well. So it's a component of the 100 points.
So she was explaining the operations, and then you add into all the other agencies,
right,
that
yeah,
weren't really. No Those support to other agencies are mandated by law. In other words, they're such as like to say an X percentage of revenues go to these agencies.
Mr.
Chairman, I just want to follow up on what Gary said about the talking points, but also from a timing perspective, but just to get it on the radar screen, in Northern Virginia, one of the things we're actively engaged in right now is the development of the capital funding that involves all the various jurisdictions. And that, the timing on that is critical because going back to the momentum plan that Vermont has as far as buying new cars, real cars for the metro system, we need to be able to identify funds by August of next year up there in that agreement. And so to the extent, you know, we've got this financial situation that we need to make people realistic about, that's a fact, because I know we're supposed to come down and meet with you guys next month and talk a little bit about that.
They are, and we'll get the talking points, but the fact of that matter is unless we can get CPR bond reauthorization or some other thing, it's going to be hard to momentum. We're going to need some help to get that done.
If you go back to slide 13, on fiscal year 16, we go from $95 million to $2 million. That, I assume, presupposes that we get paid back from 15?
Yes, the $30 million coming back to us.
Be careful
about that. If we accept it, in terms of our budget, we put it in there, but we're not. We also understand that $30 million may come up, it likely will come up in this upcoming session.
I think that, I don't know if my other ex-generals in the college agree, but we got to be a little bit careful about complaining to the General Assembly after they took the tough vote and got more revenue. We got to be a little bit careful about it. Now, so I don't think we have to be careful about saying don't take what you already gave us. I mean, I think that will resonate, and I think they're two different issues. And I don't know if our revenue estimates going forward into 17, 18, and 19 include an inflator for the gas tax or not, or whether they presuppose a static level. But I understand that is, you know, debatable about where that's going to be.
Yeah,
probably unpredictable.
The good news about that there was a
floor. We got the floor.
That's what we projected the floor.
Okay. So I think when we go to the General Assembly, we can say these are the numbers as they look now. They might get better because I agree with you. Not going to be any fixes. Nobody will come in and say we need another big transportation. So we got to live with these numbers for foreseeable future. So we need to live with these. But you can't, if you take the money back, you just took a tough vote to take money and give it to somebody else. That doesn't make any sense.
The biggest barrier to ever raising the transportation tax was the naysayers. So you're going to divert the money from the general fund. As soon as you were like, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to have a constitutional improvement. First year out of shape. Yeah. And unfortunately, I know some good, honest people sat in a room. They had to work this out.
Right.
Work it out. Unfortunately, this happened. Yeah, I'm sure it was not balanced, but it's.
Well, what we do, to Mr. Connor's point, is what we try to do is make the motion. We just say, these are the consequences. I mean, in other words, this is the consequence. But the issue then becomes this project needs to be done before that project. And it gets back. We're in the House Bill 2, but that's what happens, is that, okay, I got it, you're right, that's consequences. Well, you shouldn't have built that project over there. You should have built this project.
But I think too, it is fair to say, at least partially because of the reduction in the revenue that we anticipated because of the budgetary,
I forgot what your euphemism was for, it was very, very clever.
Budgetary raid is what I would mean. These are the projects in the Salem District, for example, that we had scheduled to start preliminary engineering on that we're now not going to do that. And for a legislator to see
actual stuff like that. I think that would take the truth.
Well, let's get into the next presentation. I think that comment right there. I don't cut this off at all, but that's you're right. That's where we're going to get into.
Just to add, the other issue.
Well, we might deal with it sooner than later. That's one of the things we'll have to go through with House Bill 2. We're going to continually get push that no monies are going back to the endowments. We continually get pushed to that. So we've been looking at ways as to how we can help that. First thing is we've got to find what House Bill 2 is. But, Mr. Donahue back there again, we've been looking at maybe a grant program. In other words, we've been increasing revenue share. Maybe we shouldn't increase revenue share. I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm just saying, I know you're different. It's a very popular program. Well, that's because it's a program they can get monies from us now, the locality. So I'm just saying that there's going to be some discussion as we go through House Bill 2 and the implications of that. I think we got a lot of moving parts now. The first thing, though, is to get House Bill 2 sort of defined what the impacts are going to be, and then we can see how those monies flow back and whether or not there's some other adjustment you want to take into account. Exactly right. Because all these are indications that we're losing flexibility and less are going directly back to locality. That's right. Yeah, Allison, she already asked that. Okay, if no more here, I guess we'll have Charlie come up. Steve,
come up with
this.
Yeah.
Yeah, more bad news for
us.
Great.
Your
bad.
Okay.
That's Steve here.
Yeah, you got it right, Mr. Chairman. Unfortunately, more bad news. Maybe a little bit of good news in here at the end. But I'm going to focus on the change from HB 2313 with respect to 2015 compared to the most recent estimates. And I guess has been talked about previously, the out years in the six-year program, there's a lot of uncertainty over those estimates. So I'm really going to focus in this presentation on the impact for 2015 as opposed to blending all those future years into it. And then there's also, when you look at when 2313 passed and you do 6 years, that's 2014 through 19 versus during 2015 through 20. So to begin with, we have a year differential. So I'm just going to focus on that one. Then I'm also going to talk about the change from June, the six-year program y'all approved in June, and then the revenue estimate came out in August and the impact of the six-year program, the revisions we're proposing. And then finally, deal with our administrative budget cuts as the chairman spoke about. So that said, this is just sort of a high-level slide that gives some percentage impacts. The first bullet there, since HB 2313 passed and put that into place in the 14 six-year program back in June of 13. So here we are 14 months later. And the revenue level that we're anticipating, we're 9% below that. So that sort of gives a history of we were hoping we'd be at this point, and 14 months later, we're almost 10% lower. Then for the change from our June six-year program to August, we have about a 4% decrease with our revenues that we have to deal with in our program and in the revised program that we're looking to November to take action. And that adds up to $13.7 million. In addition to those percentages, and you'll see in the next slide we'll get a little more detail. For 2014, our actual revenue collections were $14.2 million short of the estimates that we based the 14 plan on, and actually made allocations based on. So we have this $14.2 million shortfall that we're also contending with for 2015, and whatever we're not able to contend with in 2015 will be pushed to 2016. And then finally, as the chairman mentioned earlier, I don't want to dwell on this, but there is uncertainty over our future federal revenues, which is not the topic today, but I do think overall the revenues are declining. I think that's the trend, and I somewhat agree with the Secretary that I think the future outlook may not necessarily be increasing either. So that being said, these next few slides just provide more detail of the actual funding sources and the actual percentage decreases related to those funding sources. And this is taken back from June of 13, when HB 2313 first went into action, and then through August, and showing those declines. And as I said before, it totals 9%. And when you add that shortfall we had for 14, we're looking at 13% that the revenues are off from where the planned level was. And you go through the detail, it's across the board. I mean, there's, I know Laura, you know, in her slides talked about recordation, and you'll see on my next slide, if you look from June of 13 to August of 14, recordation looks like it's going up. If you go from June of 14, our six-year program, to August of 14, there's a decrease. So, and that's just, I think earlier someone alluded to taxation. I think it was the Secretary again alluded to taxation, and their estimating process for withholding and using what was done in 13 or 14 to estimate the next year. I think it's something similar that happened with recordation, and the estimate that we used back in June was just grossly off. There's no other way to put it. With that said, you know, you can see the different percentage changes here. Vehicle rental has had a significant decrease. The HB 2313 sales and use taxes are down 7%. And then just the special session from 1986, all the blended funding with a lot of gas tax, motor vehicle dealer purchase taxes and fees. You can see those are well off too. So this next slide takes that just the 45-day window from June to August 15th's new estimates. And for our six-year program, we need to address this $13.7 million loss of revenue. And we are proposing to do some revisions to the program for our November meeting. And in total, it's a 4% loss. And to deal with the shortfall, I just want to give you a little detail on that. You know, essentially, we're going to deal with that shortfall throughout this year. As y'all, we talked about numerous times, our program has numerous grants, numerous projects with outside partners. And a lot of times those projects come in under the balance that we've allocated. So throughout the year, we're finishing projects and balances become available. So our first hope with that $14.2 million is during 2015, some balances will come available, and those will be used to address this shortfall. The next step in the process of dealing with that is to take the shortfall from the prior year to the next six-year program that we perform. So whatever balance we don't cover, we push to the 2016 revenue estimates. So I think a message I wanted to get out here was that I think 2016 is going to be worse than 2015. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have a declining operating share. We're probably maybe looking at potential declining capital share, which is unfortunate because when the 2313 revenues came in, we went through our TISDAC process and we tried, you know, Mr. Cole, you know, we tried to set up, you know, percentage of the capital that were level and people could rely on those and plan. And our partners could plan out for years, and unfortunately, with these revenue reductions, it's looking like we can't give that stability that was looked for.
Sorry, Steve.
Sure.
Just to remind you all, the way that we distribute funds is a little bit different from VITA in that we give out our money to others and to transit agencies. And so right now, they're all in the process of developing their own budgets for next year. And so we are trying to get the word out as much as we can that next year is going to be worse, most likely, than it is this year, although we don't have any revenue estimates yet, and as Steve mentioned, there's a lot of things that we're trying to do. We'll talk a little bit about this later when we get to the operating formula, but it ties our hands a little bit in terms of the options that we have available to mitigate some of these increases.
So with that, I guess I'm going to move into the second area, which is the impact on the current six-year program, 2015 part of our program, which is, we talked about $13.7 million. And then this slide details the different programs within the DRPT agency that are impacted. And as you can see, the largest impact is transit operations. And I'm going to touch more on that in a slide or two. I guess for here, I think the other thing I wanted to mention was, you know, our transit special programs and our rail programs. Those changes are small enough that between May, when we cut off for the June six-year program, and end of August, we've had enough unobligated funds come available that we can use those balances from projects that ended with funds remaining to cover those items. And then finally, the transit reserve, which is similar, Mr. Fralin, you talked about having a reserve balance. That was the idea, you know, just a year and a half ago, that we were going to establish this reserve to help us when we had these bad times to continue at the funding levels that we had put out there to our grantees, our partners. But unfortunately, a lot of that reserve is going to probably have to be used to cover the shortfall from 14. And the reserve is only $3 million currently, and we're going to add three more million from 15, but obviously that doesn't even cover the whole shortfall. So great in theory, but when revenues decline, it doesn't help a whole lot. And finally, the last thing, the project management budget, I'll get to that at the very end of my presentation. The next slide takes that same $13.7 million and it breaks it down to the different actions that we're going to implement in the revised six-year program. And as I spoke of in the previous slide, we have the unobligated balances that are going to cover several of our programmatic areas. The transit reserve, by default, if there's a certain level of revenue, we can only take 5% of revenue. So if the revenues have declined, the transit reserve, by default, has to decline. The amount we can set aside for that reserve has to decline. That's the 0.6. For that, I just want to go now into the operating impact, because this is really probably the major item with respect to 2015. We did find the $1.6 million of deobligated balances from projects to help with the $9.7 million. But the other $8.1 million, we need y'all to take special action. And it's special action that's allowed in the Code of Virginia. And basically what that special action would do is it allows you to take, our mass transit trust funds are divided between operating, capital, and special. 72% to operating, 25% to capital, 3% to our special programs. And that's code stipulated. However, the italics here is in the code also. It allows y'all, in a time of special need, to take some of that capital allocation and move it to operating.
What the issue is here, guys, is that you don't want to ask the operators back for the money. You have the ability to take the capital, you have the ability, instead of going back to say, we've over-allocated you operations, give us money back. They don't think that's fair. So they're asking you to take $8 million and transfer from capital to operating. And just cutting through, but that's really what. So we don't have to go ask people back. They, beginning of the year, they looked and say, this is going to be the percentage we can give you. Everybody made their budgets. We didn't think it's fair to go back and ask them for the money back.
Well, it's actually very similar to process in terms of having to transfer capital to operating.
Right.
And it is, we do expect, this is just for this year, there may be additional impacts for next year as well. I do want to point out, as many of you have heard and seen presentations on our capital cliff, this does bring that capital cliff just a little bit closer. So it doesn't help in our overall capital situation, but for this year, we believe it's the most prudent alternative to mitigate the
impacts. And just to reiterate,
Jen, to follow up on that, I understand going in this year because we've given out, we
allocated the money to the different transit agencies locally. But for next year, are you telling them that the numbers are not going to be what they were so they can plan accordingly and not be back here asking for another special allocation next year?
We are, and just to remind everybody how we allocate our funds are essentially, we do it by formula, and there's new performance-based aspects of it, but essentially everybody gets the same percentage match across the board. So what will happen next year is that the percentage that they're going to get is actually going to go down. So they need to be able to plan for that because they need to fill the gap with local funds.
I just wanted to follow up. So if we were to transfer the capital funds to operating, so we're not actually cutting particular projects when we do it. We're just cutting across the board the percentage that we would be contributing to them.
If you look at the last bullet, we're going to transfer mass transit trust fund capital to operating, but then we have available CPR bond balances that we're then going to put in place of the funds that we move. So it's really just a shift of funding. We're not going to reduce anybody's capital
projects. It's top of this, what Jennifer said, is moving forward her cliff.
It does reduce the amount of capital funding available in later years for projects that we know are coming and for capital needs that we know exist.
But the immediate impact is not that certain projects would be cut. It's a matter of dealing with it.
The whole goal.
Something in the future, we lost an opportunity to fund something in the future.
Exactly. And the whole goal with what these actions that I'm explaining is to keep us whole to where we were back in June. But it does take your special, and we'll put in the resolution this wording to take this special action to transfer funds.
If you look, guys, you're all your localities. Transit funding is a big topic. Many localities are choosing to not fund it or reduce the funding. And so that's one of the reasons why we think prudent not to do it this year. But transit funding is an issue that everyone at state levels. And we're going to reach the point politically where there's going to need to be those that are dedicated to transit and those that aren't. Because they continue to look to the state to pay more and more, yet you can see the funds that we have are getting less and less.
And this is a very significant issue for state, for local governments across the state. And frankly, it's less of an impact in places like Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads, where they have the ability to shift other funds around. It's a huge impact in our rural areas and small urban communities where they don't have other sources of revenue to fill this gap. And so we're very concerned that in those areas is where they're really going to start making major service cuts, stop buying new buses. We're going to have reliability issues, safety issues. And that's frankly where we're very concerned. It's not, it's not just in the big urban areas.
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the issues too when it comes to this is when you talk about the different smaller urban areas, et cetera, is the folks who rely on transit in the smaller areas is a different group than relies on it in, say, Northern Virginia, who's taking mass transit to work. And so this has been a struggle, I know, for the local bus company around here. I think the locality is subsidizing it to the tune of $1.5 million a year as is. And it's a constant struggle between cutting peak service, cutting bus routes. And in areas like this, you're having, it's not just to get to a game or get somewhere, it's to get to work and get home. And so those cuts occur, it's a trickle-down effect through the economy, too. So it's a scary proposition there for the cuts.
Whitworth, is the MPPF right, what is balancing that fund?
The Mass Transit Trust Fund, we essentially, as the director said earlier, we distribute all of those funds. Now, from a cash perspective, obviously we put money on capital projects and we don't pay out until the grantee or our partner actually delivers the project. So there's a cash balance, but as far as committed, it's pretty much
so the $8 million is already committed that we're now going to have to pull in from our bonds, is that correct?
Correct. All right, with that, the other, I just did want to touch on the other changes to our six-year program that when we do our revision in November, that you'll see there. First, on the VRE Potomac Shores project, we had hoped to do some preliminary engineering work on some platforms involved in that project in our larger Richmond area to Potomac EIS project that y'all heard a lot about. But unfortunately, we weren't able to work that out with the Federal Railroad Administration. So we've gone back to VRE and CSX and incorporated that work in this project to get that done. So that was $1.3 million more rail enhancement funds. And on the rail side, we talked a lot about trains. On the rail side, there are some available unobligated balances. Also on VRE, they had, back in the program in June, they had an expansion rail car purchase item. And there was just an error in the way they filled out our application and then the way we also read their application. In a different area, they did actually explain what they were trying to do. And so they came to us after the program was out, and we worked through that. And essentially, we needed to get them to the 68% level of capital funding for rolling stock replacement. And we're going to use available federal flexible STP funds to make that up to them. The Christiansburg Park and Ride Lot project, don't want to alarm anybody, just wanted to make sure that it's going to come out of the DRPT six-year program because it's going to be now managed completely by VDOT. So the project's still there. It's just going to be removed from our program. And then finally, the one bit of good news I was mentioned real early on was we did recently sign our a two-year contract for our regional passenger Amtrak service. And compared to the estimates that we were using back in our June six-year program, we did come in $3.1 million over the 6 years less in cost for that. So one good item that we did actually get to reduce some expenditures. And another than that, they're minor technical adjustments as far as wording. And then, as I've mentioned, we found more unobligated balances, so where we detail those out, those numbers are changing. But nothing else related to the projects. And finally, just want to speak briefly on our administrative, our project management, project compliance administrative budget. We have, through the governor's initiative, looked through our budget, it was approved back in June, and reducing it by 5%, which is $522,000. And what we're going to do is there's certain initiatives that we had hoped to accomplish this year, and we're going to either try to get those done internally, reduce the scale of what we're doing, or put them off. For instance, we were going to look at our document management system internally, and we just decided to put that project off, but it's just not important enough right now. The other item, which is about $140,000, was the Appropriation Act. As Ms. Farmer talked about, the Appropriation Act passed after we did the six-year program. It passed, I think, June 3rd, it was signed. I think June 23rd, I'm sorry. Anyway, on June 23rd, that Appropriation Act removed what was in the original budget, 3% bonus for all the state employees. So we had to budget for that bonus when we did the budget back in June that we approved. Well, when it was removed June 23rd, now there is not going to be a bonus. I think it's going to be November. So that $140,000 waiting on that. We also have planned for an additional 2% for 2016. And just this last bullet just shows you that in total, our budget for the year that we'll come back to you to revise in November for your approval went down by that $500,000. With that, I'll gladly field any questions.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
since we wrote up, maybe an update on the rail runner project? Can we write down the track here?
Sure. Yeah, sure, Jeff.
We are, we've been working with Norfolk Southern on the preliminary engineering, and we have sent over the draft plans to the city, and we are in the Amtrak, and we're waiting on some comments back on that. And I believe that we're planning to have a call with everybody in the next week or so just to kind of make sure everyone's on the same page with design. The city is also, from what we understand, moving forward with the accessible work that they've been for doing with the culvert in the area and the station as well. What we are actually hoping is that by mid-November, we may be in a position to actually issue the notice to proceed for the construction work. We're hoping that that may even coincide with the timing of the governor's conference. There's still a few more approvals that have to occur. I think everything is moving forward as planned. Probably the one thing we're tracking very closely as well is the work that the city is doing. As you know, they're responsible for providing the station. I don't know if Ford, you know anything else about that. That I believe is moving forward. I'm not sure what the status is of right of the air condition on that.
Right now, I think that before the engineering and before the culvert work occurred, we had to make sure that we knew the precise alignment of the platform. So the city has budgeted $3 million in capital plan, is ready to begin work, is going to use as many similar contractors as Norfolk Southern uses in order to try to make things seamless dealing with the tracks. But the city's ready to move forward on construction as soon as GRPT gives the okay.
It's on the track.
When is it anticipated to be up and running?
It's scheduled for 2017, so we are always looking at ways to accelerate that. And I know that Norfolk Southern has actually indicated that they're willing to allow us to, once construction of some major key elements are in place, they will be willing to start service as ready, perhaps even earlier. But a lot of it, again, will depend on sort of also the station. We may be able to even start service without a station, to be honest. But I think. Right now, it's still scheduled for 2017, but we hope to accelerate that.
And another thing about station, locations are being identified. The issue is, does the city want a train station, or do you try to attract a private developer to a parking lot you have and have them build it and you use the back area as a picnic? So that's all being worked on right now. I would say that the city will be ready whenever the train is ready.
Parking lot or not.
There will be a chance.
We laugh, but they did that in Norfolk. They actually started the service with essentially a trailer for the feral planes.
Okay, Mr. Kilpatrick is going to give a fairly short, high-level overview of the changes to the 6-year plan and identifying projects. And then after that, I'm going to go through some pretty specific items point out why we need to do House Bill 2. Shall I have the first word with you?
Thank you. As the Secretary just spoke, and as you're all aware, we're getting ready to go into what I'll call an out-of-cycle update of the 6-year plan. And frankly, these are the reasons we're calling it a revision to the 15-20 6-year plan. In the fall, we would have public meetings that solicited input regarding future projects, but in this case, this actually is a public hearing process that we've undertaken. So why are we doing it? We need to transition to full implementation of House Bill 2 by July 1 of 2016, and so we're already working through that process. We need to make adjustments on revenues available for construction. You heard from Laura the adjustments that we know, but just yesterday we had some additional information, and we'll need to incorporate some of that. It is not in the draft updated 6-year plan. So the draft updated 6-year plan, which will go out, and there are full copies of that, do not incorporate the announcement yesterday by the governor. So we're working through some of that. House Bill 2, eligible funds were not added to non-exempt projects. I think that's another important point. So House Bill 2 funding, it does not change the allocation of funds. That discussion came up earlier about the CTB formula, the old 40-30-30 formula. House Bill 2 does not address that. We recognize that we'll need to look at that, and ultimately it will require legislation if there's going to be a change. Funds that must be prioritized include state and federal highway funds, and the legislation excludes certain types of projects. I'm not going to read that list, but that gives you the you see the types of projects that were exempted from, were excluded from the prioritization process. They may have some other prioritization process. As a matter of fact, just about everything there goes through a prioritization process. It's just not what's required by House Bill 2. Again, in terms of the projects specifically that were exempted from prioritization, we talked in the previous slide about various fund types that are specifically excluded by code. Projects that were fully funded and NEPA complete may be exempted by code. And then projects that are asset management in nature, and I would call these capital replacement types of projects, were excluded in the legislation from going through prioritization. But again, to reinforce, our paving program and our bridge program are clearly, it goes through a data-driven prioritization process. We don't simply say we're going to pave this amount in this district and this amount in the other. It's truly based on the needs. Candidate projects. Allocations were adjusted on projects in the six-year plan that did not meet the exemption. Again, this is so you're going to see 62 projects with a value over the 6 years of about $416 million. The funding available, now you're going to go into an update in next spring. You'll add the seventh year will become the sixth year of the plan. And that will likely show a significant amount of money available to go through prioritization. But that money hasn't been allocated at all. So while it's 416 over 6 years, we don't have that number for you today, but it's a pretty sizable amount of money that would come in year seven that would be available for prioritization.
Well, that's assuming we don't have another reduction in revenue.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So that's what we're projecting now, but 7 years in the future.
And the last bullet, again, how unrealistic that might be, additional revenues, whether it's federal, if the federal government takes action to change or increase the funding, if just general revenues go up, it actually improves the bucket for House Bill 2 projects. The next steps, we have 9 hearings over the next about 45 days. We begin in Lynchburg and Hampton Roads next week. Then you can see how this is going to go through the process. And then in November, our November meeting, we will consider the final six-year plan. And I believe that meeting will actually be here, probably in the same room in November. That's the first day of the Governor's Transportation Conference. A couple of takeaways that I heard around the room, very important, I think, are some talking points for members. And we will get those together. In addition, looking at sending some correspondence to the to NPOs, counties, cities, towns, reinforcing what we're doing here, as well as the giving them realistic expectations regarding funding. The other area we're continuing to work on the adjustments that are part of this this bill that was actually dropped yesterday in the General Assembly. So we're working on any adjustments that might occur as a result of that action. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Mr.
Knopf,
just remind me, how many total projects are in
the
6 year plan?
Rough numbers, how many?
4,000.
About 4,000.
$400 million out of a $13 billion plan. I mean, so you can see House Bill 2, while no proof of it, I mean, it's that's a small piece. It will grow in the future, but it's a relatively small piece of the 6 year plan. So most of the 6 year plan goes forward because of what Charlie mentioned, either exemptions or projects under not meant to eviscerate.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
So I have this handout here that says HB2 adjustments in the Salem district. Are these the ones that came off the plan or got put on the plan?
Those are the ones that were adjusted.
Yeah, that's correct.
It wouldn't be put on, got cut, taken off.
Okay.
Other words, so what you've seen is that money has been removed. So everybody has their list removed. No, and put into a total amount. If you go to the 6 year plan, I haven't verified yesterday. there's $416 million setting in an engine, and it says it came off of these projects. And I don't want to talk a little bit about the projects, but it came off of those. These projects will go through House Bill 2, and their money may go back on them.
Right.
Yeah, so, but that's physically how you'll see it.
Now, on the six-year improvement program revised working draft, is there a summary in here that tells me which projects have been recommended to come off, or do I need to go through and look? I've got a bunch of things here that say previous allocation, and then I've got zeros and 15. Does that mean they're
Not necessarily. Okay. But that project list should be the one that you'll now go in there and see in the six-year plan that those no longer have monies on them. You have your listing of...
So this six-year plan revision, I thought it also took into account the fact that we had to come up with $90 million.
It does.
Okay.
That's
what I'm saying. Where's the list of those projects that were in here that aren't in here now?
I don't think we didn't create a specific list to remove projects. That's more on our, I'll call it a balancing act that we try to do in terms of adjusting when money flows year after year. Now, projects that are subject to House Bill 2 are flagged in your, actually there's a designation for each one of them. Because those projects have not been removed from the six-year plan.
Right.
The funding has been put into this balance account. Those projects still exist in the six-year plan, and what they would show is a balance to complete equal to the amount that was removed, except for there may be some other projects that the balance to complete was off the end of the six-year plan, but again, that's generally how it shows up in the balance to complete area.
I just think it'd be helpful if we had that list instead of having to go through project by project throughout last low book versus this one.
Yeah, we can generate that list.
By district.
Yeah,
by
district.
Yes. We'll make that happen.
That's important. Yeah. It saves a lot of time.
Mr. Malvin.
Obviously, that what I'm hearing is there's no money in the out years for construction. How does that impact our planning moving forward in terms of when we're updating this plan on an annual basis?
As I mentioned, year seven, when you all vote next May or June, year seven becomes the last year of the plan. And let's say in big numbers, that's about $1.5 billion of construction money based on our current revenue forecasting. About $1.5 billion worth of projects will come on to the six-year plan. Some of those are existing projects where it's getting additional funding, and some will be new projects. So again, in terms of in the out years, the funding will, every year, you know, you drop the year you're in and you add another year. And it's about, in big numbers, by the time you get to year six, about $1.5 billion that will come on.
But remember, you're adding new projects all along, so that money's being used up because all along you're adding projects. So
we'll still be adding projects.
Yes.
The
gap may close with more crossover, with lack of funding, or fast growth.
Yes, or having the, let's say we put one of these projects on now, and this thing, well, that may go into your, you know, that may go out there and use some of that money. So, in other words, so, you know, we're trying to get a pipeline where you see it on this year, and the project's on there, it's been scored. It's defunded and it doesn't come off. So every 4 years, we don't go through another iteration of something we've worked on, but the new governor says this is not my priorities.
And in general terms, the plan is that the ideal condition of the plan is one where the funding in year six comes on, or year seven comes on to year six, and it's doing a combination of finishing out the funding on existing projects. And it's adding new projects. I think one of the things folks maybe sometimes lose track of, when we update the six-year plan, generally speaking, we're not dropping money on year one. And so now a new project that comes up all of a sudden doesn't get funded in year one. Now that does happen in some cases, in some certain types of projects, depending on the type and the type of funding, they do tend to get funded earlier in the 6 years. But kind of over the general program, and this is where I think we need to continue to reinforce to the public, when money comes onto the, when a project gets funded, a new project, traditionally or under normal conditions, I'd call, the funding will be in the outer years of the six-year plan. Not that we're going to start design on that project today. We got a new project, and in year one, we've got money on it, and we're going to start designing and building it. That's just not how the program works. We're doing a lot of things internally to stabilize this, and back to House Bill 2, this will really help us in having a stable platform. We've prioritized the projects, and we're working the plan, instead of projects coming on and off and on and off, which is very disruptive to our operations.
So we're rolling out these zeros, and it's got previous allocation, and then it's got zeros all the way through. If you don't have enough, I mean, I'll put it this way, it's easy to get a project on a six-year plan. It's hard to get it funded.
Yeah, it has been if you don't have funding on it. If the next 2 years you didn't have funding, it didn't mean you're going to have it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes.
Mr. Sheriff, what's the timing for bringing these 62 projects back through the formula? When and how are they prioritized?
I'm going to defer to my partner here.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Passwoods, these projects, along with other projects that were solicited from local governments, will be considered in fall of 2015, and then the scores for all of those projects, these 62 and any other that have met the screening process, will be brought back to the board as we develop the FY17 six-year improvement program.
Would you repeat that, please?
These projects, along with other candidate projects that will solicit from local communities, will be scored in fall of 2015. After the board has voted on the prioritization process, we'll use that process in the fall to solicit projects. Then we're going to evaluate them late winter and early in 2016, a list of projects with their scores using the whatever range you all decide on, 1 to 10, 1 to 100, will be provided to the board. We will then discuss the funding that's available for the various projects, and the next program for capacity expansion will be based on those scores and the input from you all. And all these projects will be projects that will get screened, and if they make it through the screening process, will then be scored along with any other successful candidate projects at local governments.
So obviously they'll be mixed in with everything else that they consider at that time.
Yes, sir.
From the score. So, thanks.
Yeah, it'll be up. We haven't kind of decided, but it'll be up to you if you what you want to consider to be screened. That will be working where the planning has a screening process. So I mean, it's not just going to be, you know, I don't like that where I can put this. I mean, it's going to be a process that you go through, and this board will determine what that, you know, process is to screen. So, Mr. Cole?
Commissioner, is it possible on the HB2 adjustment list to have dollar values assigned to them? I know we can calculate it going back through the schedule, but I think it would be helpful just to have a little more column. But.
Absolutely. We can do that. One of the other things I wanted to reinforce in terms of these projects, we wanted a good way of describing bringing them to a logical point in their development. So some of them have some funds left on them. What you didn't want to do is just lift the pen off the table if you were in design or in midstream and moving utilities or whatever that might be, because that again is very disruptive. But we wanted to make sure that we didn't proceed on beyond what we would consider just reasonable business until it went through prioritization. So again, I think it's a important piece. People say, oh, they stopped all work. Well, what we've done is we're bringing it to a slow, we're stopping the work at a point that makes sense, not just, again, lifting the pen for the paper.
Yeah, it's $400 million out of $13 billion. I mean, this is not a significant amount today through our construction. So I don't want to hear that everything not from you guys. That's what I'm hearing. Oh, we're starting all construction. That's not true. Mr. Whitworth.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to that, if you look in the miscellaneous section of the statewide portion of the six-year program, you'll actually see the years in which the funds have come off projects, and the 90-plus percent of that funding is in 17 on. And so if you actually look at the impacts here, the impact for money that was going to be spent in this current fiscal year, even the next fiscal year, is very low.
I think the concern is just getting the process established appropriately. So while there's little impact for this year,
assumes you think the process before was any good, which I'll come back to. And I want to talk to him about a couple of projects, but I agree. Mr. Whitworth?
What I'd like a little better understanding is the purpose of the public hearing. Each of these localities will have a public hearing, and I assume at that point everyone attending will have seen their respective adjustments. And I assume that the purpose of this public hearing is really to address or to allow our constituents to address those specific adjustments. Is that correct?
Yes. I think that the purpose of public hearing, there's some education that needs to go on in terms of our ability to provide information to the public about House Bill 2, there's some other things about the broader V-Trans update. It's about updating people on where we are. I think the point here that we do need to do a brief presentation on sort of budget impact so people understand the table that's set in front of them. It does give folks an opportunity to say, I've got these projects that we would like you to consider moving forward with the six-year plan. But I think, again, it's important that we reinforce that reality that while a jurisdiction or region may bring forward, I'll call it a new project, it needs to be grounded in the fact that we have very limited resources.
Well, it's that latter part that I think there is, certainly I'm receiving questions on, is we are saying we have a comment period for these proposed drafts, and there is an implication that something could change with these.
That's right. Nothing's going to change. The law report. This is law. These projects will not. You're not going to
come back with 60 or 58. So this is really fait accompli, is it not?
I wouldn't say a fait. Let me talk a little bit about this transition period. Because that's what we're getting. This is not us making, this is the law. Now, the law says that even if you score it low, you may choose to fund it. So the law doesn't say you line them up 1 to 100 and you write them down. It says you score them all and then you choose the ones you want. This board chooses the ones, but you explain why you did that. So in other words, it doesn't mean that you're only going to do the 90s, but it says if you do a 40 before you do a 90, you got to explain why you chose to do that. So, first of all, this fact that, well, if it scores low, it never gets funded, that's still your decision. That is still the CTB's decision.
But that's after you go through HB2.
That's correct.
I'm talking about the 62 project.
So let me go through that. So what the law says is that they haven't been through NEPA, and they're not under construction, they're not fully funded, they got to get scored. It doesn't say may get scored, it said shall be scored.
And I think that's an important point then. These 62 projects were not discretion, at anybody's discretion, they were there. They were defined.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Whitworth, that is correct. A lot of times when we are developing this process, and I was talking to legislators or NPO folks, they said, well, can you tell me exactly what districts these projects are located in? I said, actually, I can't. I can tell you the criteria that are being used by staff to identify these projects, but candidly, it was just based on whether or not they met certain criteria, and those were the ones that were listed by the chairman there, not fully funded, not through NEPA, and that's why a lot of this money, again, that you'll see in that holding account is in the out years, because these were projects that aren't currently underway and are in those outer years.
And to me, that's the most important thing to communicate at this hearing. I mean, it'd be nice to hear with comments, but the fact of the matter is, the purpose of this hearing is to communicate over, as there are 62 projects here that didn't meet the criteria, not that they were selected by the Deputy of Transportation because he thought we needed to come up with $400 million.
Yeah, let me look, there's, Mr. Brown,
I think we've got to be, what Dixon was saying is, I think, really clear. We've got to be really clear about what is coming off because we can't afford it and what's coming off because we're scoring.
That's right.
That's got to be really, really clear.
And, you know, in the purpose of these public hearings, you know, I think people are going to look at them as just an extension of what the public hearings we have on the six-year plan every year. So, you know, that we do in May or June or whatever we do it. And they're going to come in with their wish list.
Right.
You know, and so we've got to be clear that this is not what this
is. That's not what this is.
This is about HB 2. Now, one thing we could do during these, if we wanted to, is get public input on what the criteria ought to be under HB 2 and how we should weight those six criteria. You know, I don't know if we're planning on having another public hearing at some point about getting the public's input on that. It may be too tight now.
Yeah.
But that this is an opportunity for that.
And Mr. Chandler, Mr. Ray, to your point, that's exactly some of the things we've been discussing with the local MPOs as we've gone out to have these preliminary discussions with the folks there, is that we want them to start thinking about what are types of candidate projects they might submit and what are the benefits they think those projects provide, so that when we have these hearings and future discussions with them, we can start to understand what they think are beneficial projects and ensure that our measures, to the extent practical, can capture those types of benefits moving forward there. And so I do think that would be a helpful discussion to have with the folks at these fall meetings, and it's one of the things we're hoping to accomplish.
Is that correct? I just want to be clear what we're going to receive. We're going to have this list updated, which is the projects that did not meet the exemptions and have to go through HB2 with dollars assigned to them. That's one. Number two, we're also going to receive a list by district of where dollars got locked off current projects in the out years. Is that correct, Mr. Secretary?
Yeah, but I think they're not mutually exclusive, because the pot ends up being what we can do for four.
Well, but there could be different criteria, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
You could have projects that are coming off and say, this is coming off because of prioritization, this is coming off because we can't afford it. But I think it's an important point to point out, these are draft proposals by staff of what the six-year plan ought to be. We get to vote on that in November again, right?
You make the final decision, that's right.
And I have one for the final question on my side. Does the CTB or the administration going forward have the ability to designate projects that are of statewide significance that supersede HB2, or is everything after you go through HB2?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Garzinski, the way the law is drafted, capacity expansion projects, regardless of their statewide, regional, or other levels of importance, need to go through this process.
Regardless of what we think or what the government, the city
government. They get scored. You can skill, if you decide you want to fund a two,
they have to get scored.
They got to get scored. The public has to know that this scoring, but that's the whole intent. You can still fund it. In fact, that's what I want to talk to you about, two projects.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, can I just address Mr. Fralin's point about the revenue reduction? So there was about, I believe, $200 million, that's what staff talked about earlier, and that gets kind of cut in half if you look at the CTB formula. So half of that is for repair projects, and the other half of that is for capacity expansion projects. What I believe staff did, and we can confirm this with the list that we can provide to you all in the coming days, is that with regard to the projects that were subject to House Bill 2, that half that had to come out of capacity projects, that list is the same. Mm-hmm. It overlaps completely. On the repair side, a lot of what happened is funding in outer years. You had projects that were fully funded in the beginning for pavement or bridge rehab, and those are now more stretched out mm-hmm. with their funding sources in the years. But again, we'll work with staff on that, but I wanted to really explain that for the HB2 list, for that half the money that comes out of capacity projects, those overlap fully.
Well, that's confusing.
It's not my intent, Mr. Bell.
We don't think we took, there's not many, we'll go, not coming off because of reductions. It reduced the pot for, in the out years, for
I'm just looking through here. I just went through the cinema. I think there's some coming out. So maybe I'm not reading that right.
That's what I was getting to.
There's some $95 million out of your fiscal year 15 spending and don't change the 6-year plan. I don't know how you do that.
Just friendly, we will make sure you have a list. And we'll
walk
you
through the way that shows. Maybe I need a special meeting.
Many of them were in out years, William, and they would have gone through House Bill 2 anyways, the issue.
Transit is not on the table. I mean, that's something separate out here.
Unless it is highway funds that would otherwise have to be scored. That's right. Transit is not, but if you, there are, we have some money that can go, you use those monies for transit, then you got to score.
And we're referring to
when we say that is the mass transit capital fund that we have to be distributed statewide. Many of those projects are actually state vehicle repair projects, and those are all distributed based on the CTV's tiers that you all agreed upon last year. So that those funds are not part of HB2.
Yeah, but what I was referring to, Jen, you know, it's a topic of conversation earlier. For instance, funding momentum, which we made a commitment on, or funding the Columbia Pike light rail. I mean, there's commitments made on those that they're not scored, right?
The Columbia Pike is before 2017, so it doesn't require to be scored. But let me just talk to you about the practical issues here, because remember, again, the point is the bill says they have to be scored. It doesn't say that's what you have to fund. The whole purpose of the bill is to say, guys, this political process that we've got going on, you know, we need to put light of day why this project gets funded and this one doesn't. That's what the real purpose of the bill is. You got to score. Let me take Route 630, which seems to be, you know, getting a lot of press now because a former board member, and he's out there how this is a political process. June 30th of last year, that project had $47 million on it. Last year, you know, not coming before the board, I mean, after we knocked it off, it's done, $150 million gets transferred to that project, on the project. Now, you end up voting on it, but I mean, it's not all vetted out here in the whole, but $150 million gets put. I'm not saying it's not a good project. But I'm saying, I don't know how that project is any better than maybe somewhere else, but you know, it's all relevant. And then, all those monies are in the out years. But then, they have about $10 million on for right-of-way, but it's going to cost about $50 million for right-of-way, but to lock it up, they start buying right-of-way. In other words, so now, all of a sudden, this is getting a lot of publicity. It shouldn't be scored under House Bill 2. What we're saying is, why not? Why shouldn't it be scored under House Bill 2? Now, that's the way the process sort of worked before, about, you know, everybody would come in and lobby and the whole bit. But the issue is that may be a great project, but we reduced our plan $1 billion, $180 million project. We've reduced it $1 billion. And now we have this scoring situation that this project would have clearly been under it, except not a special exemption was to buy right away. So this didn't come out for political. It popped out because it was $150 million transferred right before we're getting ready to do this. Now, what we've done is gone back and look at this, and quite frankly, we're going to make a recommendation that we reduce the project from 150 to about 180 to 130, 120, because the scope of the project would not have probably scored well under House Bill 2. You know, in other words, that's one of the House Bill 2 things, is you really get the good bang for your buck. So that project, we're going to recommend going forward, but not at the level it was before in that regard. Not at the level it was before. Notwithstanding all this about everything's supposed to be political. That's why we got to do House Bill 2. That's what was happening before.
Why wouldn't you take it back and score it?
Well, we are going to take it back and score it, but we're going to recommend we fund it.
Okay.
We're going to recommend we fund it, because the right of way started and all that stuff, we're going to recommend, but we're going to score it. Now, I don't know how it's going to, it probably is going to score okay, but we're going to fund it, but we're still going to score it. We have to score it. The law requires we have to score it in that regard. I'll throw in another political thing that's starting to come from the papers. The stuff we got on 29. Technically, I mean, 29 is going to have to be scored. We're moving forward with contracts and all. It's going to be scored. You know, but we thought that, and working through with the board here, we thought that was the best thing to do, to leave those money to address something that happened in 40 years. So in other words, these people saying, well, you know, this is a political process, they're going to be scored. We just choose to recommend to you to fund them in that regard. On these, because it's transition period. I mean, some of these are pretty clear. There's nothing coming on them for a few years. And, you know, there's really no choice. These are some in there. The other thing is, we're not going to eliminate governors running on platforms, and they say they want light rail somewhere, and he wins the election. Well, my guess is that we're still going to get pressure to put that in the future, although a lot of it given up. But the issue is it'll be scored. It'll be scored and says, well, yeah, this is what we recommend to fund. Now, that means you have to fund it, but so that's the point of this. What I'm getting across to you is, guys, is that it doesn't, you make the final decision. At the end of the day, you make the final decision. But what it says is that when you make that decision, we're going to have, hopefully, some type of consistent scoring process that puts in light of day why that decision was made. Not because Senator so-and-so had influence, or a CTV member, I did it. I mean, I had influence and talked to Charlie and the secretary into doing something. Not being critical of them. I mean, or getting direction for doing it. That's what it is. So this does not, in fact, it puts more power more than ever in the CTV. All it says is, though, is we're trying to put the light of day how these projects stack up. And while we're going to have a lot of issues about getting the criteria, the main thing is, as long as they're consistently applied, then you have a relativity. If they're consistently applied, it may not be exactly right, but your direction will be right. That's what House Bill 2 is. So, yes, there are some transitional things in here. The two that come out are 630, that stick out the month, and the 29 projects. But they're going to get scored. Even though we're going to request that they get funded. But they're going to get scored in that. But that's getting back to our original conversation about, the tightness of the money, why this is so important, because if we fund one, it's necessarily not new money. It's taking something from something else because all the monies are committed in that. So, I'm not trying to over simplify the process or what have you, but it's becoming already people are pushing back because they don't like the fact that their project is going through this. It doesn't mean it won't get funded. It means it has to get scored.
Chairman, will the 29 contracts be awarded before we ever even
start the project? They will, because they want the commitments have already been made. And that was, quite frankly, the governor's decision in there. I'm just laying it out. What it is, the governor's decision. By the way, that's pretty much it. Most governors won't have, from this point forward, they got to be scored. And, when I just talked with you, I've talked to Speaker Howell about, and I've talked to the Appropriations Chair about, and Chris Jones. So they know, before we put this in, they know all of what this is. And that. So,
good. A comment, and I think I understand exactly what you're saying, Aubrey, and I think that that's 100% correct. I also think that if you let me pick the scoring criteria, I can pick the project.
That's why it's got to be consistent.
So
that's
we've got to be consistent about it, and this board's going to have what I would consider in the history of the Commonwealth transportation effort, an opportunity to set those criteria first. It's not to say they won't be adjusted, but we can set those first. And I think I'm not clear on what our plan is for when that's going to take place, how we're going to do that, when all this sausage is going to get made, because that's really making the sausage. It's not pulling them off.
That's right.
It's putting them back right on. So what are we doing?
Dave, we're not 100%. When I say about 100%, we haven't got it. Where are the preliminary stages to come to you with the money?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fralin, what we've been doing right now is conducting initial public outreach to all the communities as required by law to really talk about this and understand, help them understand how the process is intended to work and get some initial feedback from them on things that they're concerned about or think should be taken into account in the discussion. So, for example, some of the issues, and I'll be updating the board at the next meeting, in more detail on this, but folks have kind of said, make sure you don't just look at future conditions as you're quantifying the benefits of projects. Make sure you look, or not current conditions, excuse me, that you look into the future, particularly when looking at economic development and other benefits that may come. In some parts of the state, they're very interested in how co-funded projects be scored. And so right now, we're identifying kind of the list of issues. As I talked to the board in May in Charlottesville about, we do have staff working groups moving forward evaluating different measures. And once they've conducted their initial evaluation, we're going to come talk to the board about those types of measures so you can provide input on them and explain what we think the benefits and shortcomings are of different measures. But it will be an iterative process with the board.
So I understand that, but Mr. Chairman, if okay, you've got all the money that's been going on our CTV for. So the CTV formula is going to have a prioritization, and we're going to have disagreements about what that ought to be. Now, also, if there's any money left over that starts falling through the 40-40-30 formula, each, the way I read the law, each construction district will have its own set of priorities. For example, the idea was that in Gary's district it might be congestion, and in John's district it might be economic development. And they'll be weighted differently. So we've got to have two, if I read the bill right, we've got to have two ways of prioritizing.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fralin,
I may be wrong.
You're right that there would be, if funds fall into the 40-30-30 formula, there would be funds prioritized at the construction district level, because those primary funds through the funding allocation formula could only be used in that district. But even in the CTB formula, as we weight the factors in the different areas of the state, they're going to be different, even though we're going to be comparing projects at a statewide level. Which is to say, there may be a project in your district, and one in Mr. Garzinski's, that both scored an 80, but his got to 80 mostly on congestion, and yours got there mostly on safety. So the weighting...
That's important for people to understand.
That's right. And the weighting will be the same in the primary as well as the statewide level. It's just the allocation of funds will be slightly different.
This board will determine whether it's a rural or it's a urban project. The staff will make recommendations, but that's the whole idea, is to make it comparable, not to, and actually, my personal opinion is I think rural communities will do well under this.
But it'll be interesting to see. I didn't know that, Nick, and I appreciate that. The other thing is, we're going to have to figure out as a board what we do with safety. How you don't make that number one, and that's hard to deal with.
It comes off the top, but it will.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fralin, so we do with this two things with safety. First, there's a specific federal program that was recently about doubled in size called the Highway Safety Improvement Program funds, and it's about $60 to $70 million, I believe, annually in the Commonwealth. Those funds are exempt, and so there is always going to be a rolling set of safety projects that are prioritized across the Commonwealth without regard to the House Bill 2 process. And then there are going to be discussions we're going to have as we weight the different factors for the capacity expanding projects with regard to how safety is treated vis-a-vis congestion, economic development, and other factors.
Yeah, that's a good point, but even at that level, I didn't know about that, but even at that level, there are going to be some projects that are going to be more expensive than that. Like, for those of you who are driving back up 81, the Arcadia Curve is probably the most dangerous place on Interstate 81 in any state. That's more than $30 million to fix that.
Well, let's take 220, for instance. Most of that money is safety money.
Right.
I have a comment and a quick question. I do think as we're going through this transition period, though, Mr. Whitworth's point about making sure that those projects that have been listed as coming out of the six-year plan, because they must go through the H2 prioritization process, they are there because by code, they met the criteria for the prioritization of that. So this had nothing to do about the validity or the worthiness of the project. It was simply a definition.
The scoring will determine the validity.
Correct.
Of the project.
So that's why they're there.
If you move faster, you can move faster.
Exactly. My quick question is, there are a number of factors. I mean, the fact that right now, 62 projects, a very small percentage of all of our work, is actually going through the process. And there are a number of exclusion factors. Do those exclusion factors remain in place? And as we go forward, is it still a very small percentage of our work that's actually going to go through the prioritization process? Is it just mainly new, when you describe it, new capacity construction projects?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Valentine, over time, the amount of money will grow significantly. Right now, because projects that are underway, that were fully funded and through NEPA were exempt, you have a lot of allocations of funds that would otherwise run through this process in the current six-year program that aren't going to run through because they're on a project that's underway. I know the commissioner said he didn't have the exact number, and we don't, but I expect that the amount of money in FY21 and the next update that will be added to that holding account will be between $300 and $500 million. And each year after that, it will be amount around that that will be put into that holding account. And so if you look at that in the future years, it is going to be a significant amount of money on an annual basis. And so it could be when we have a six-year program that's fully in the out years, has no funds that are exempt, you could have potentially $3 billion that would run through this process.
But if we did have a project that was, it's a safety issue, and it's being funded by the Highway Safety Federal Funds, it's automatically going to get funded.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Valentine, that fund would be exempt from the HB2 process.
Right. Doesn't mean it's going to get funded. It means it's exempt under the process. It may not rise to the level when you guys think it's safety enough, but it's not have to go through process.
So I was just addressing, you know, part of what you were raising about, well, why is it safety always at the top? Well,
it is.
It is.
Well, it is up to whatever the source of the fund is.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, after about this time.
When the new funding for transit was legislated, I guess it was 2013 as well, one of the ways that we went about deciding how to distribute was an advisory committee made up of all of the players, VTA, VACO, VML, all of those folks. And while at the end of the day, PRPT and the CTB made the final decision, it was extremely important to get the input of those folks on an ongoing basis. It was tedious. Steve will tell you, I don't know, I guess we had 13 or 14 meetings. But at the end of the day, there was buy-in by the vast majority of folks. Are we thinking about doing anything of that nature, of actually seeking representatives from BACO, PML? They're going to have a lot of skin in the game.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cole, the process we've been moving forward with is we found a higher level of interest in this process than I think was expressed with the TISDAC process. And so I think what we'll be looking towards is kind of regional workshops that are held more than once in different parts of the states, where we invite even a broader set of stakeholders in to provide input. The other thing that we've committed to the PDCs and NPOs, as I've gone out there to talk with them, is that we will come back out to talk to them in their own boardrooms and other places to get that input throughout this process as there's more information and as the board, after the board is briefed on various issues. So I think we are looking at doing something, perhaps not a one advisory group, because I don't know, there's always going to be folks who are going to want to be on that. More folks want to be on that we can put on there, that we need to actually do more intensive outreach on a regional level where we bring all the stakeholders from the region in for like a day, several times, to be able to have that input.
Part of this, as Nick mentioned, we're doing a lot of staff work. We thought about it, but we just got you together right now and said, here's what we're going to do. Well, what are we going to talk about? We're trying to put staff work in the definitions and all that. So when we come to you, say, here are some parameters for you to decide, instead of us sitting around and you determining, I think this is a rural project, and this one ought to be, in other words, we're trying to give you some parameters. And that's why we're going to have a two-day we're having another two-day meeting in October in Richmond. And we'll get a more and more expansive review on where we are with House Bill 2. Nick is over there saying that. But now, he and I have been having these same conversations. And we thought that instead of just getting you involved right now, where we're just discussing what we're doing, we actually have a lot of staff work. We've got consultants working and putting parameters around things. So when Nick presents it, these are sort of a guidelines that you can start deliberating from.
And Mr. Chairman, I would just say, Mr. Cole, if there's folks that are saying that we're not getting out to them, please let me know. We put thousands of miles in the state car. I look forward to putting more. on them. I mean, just on Thursday, we're going to the TPO in Hampton Roads, and then I'm going to Lynchburg that afternoon, and then to Northern Virginia for some meetings there the next day. So we really are committed to getting out, to talking to folks in their part of the state. We're not making them come to Richmond to come talk to us. We really do value and want this input from the folks across the Commonwealth. And so if there are folks that we're not reaching that we need to be, please let me know, and I will the secretary know, and I'd be more than happy to make sure we get out there as soon as we can.
Secretary, quick question. When we revise this project sheet with dollar amounts, can we also see an estimate of the dollars required to bring it to hold here, whatever that logical holding point is, and then the timing associated with that as well? My concern is these projects in Northern Virginia in particular, they're all visible. But if we have continued work going on, for instance, right-of-way relocation, utility relocation, a project we've identified being on hold, and the optics of that are questionable. So we can look at not only the timing to bring the project to a logical hold, but the estimate of cost to keep that available.
In general terms, I think you're not going to, I'd say utility relocation is like a physical action going on in the field. I won't say 100%, it's unlikely that we would have a project. When we say bring it to a logical conclusion, we're probably, if we're moving utilities, it's not going through prioritization because it's that far along. It's through NEPA, it was fully funded. We don't typically begin moving utilities until project is fully funded.
So most of the dollars are bringing to a hold in the PE?
In general terms, there may be some right of way, but more likely it's in the engineering area doing the preliminary engineering work.
Okay. But there might be right of way acquisitions as well?
Potentially. Yeah.
And would they continue in the situation until it's scored?
Yeah,
so they would hold until it's scored.
The part that gets, I'll call it tricky, you've made an offer on a property. We're in a negotiation phase on a particular parcel. Do you stop and pull back, or do you close out and that acquisition process? And frankly, a lot of that comes down to very specific details on a specific project. You don't want to buy right of way that you ultimately may not use, but at the same time, you don't want to, again, you're in the middle. It's going to be a project by project basis, and we're trying to bring these to a logical point. What we don't want to do is slamming on the brakes, which is very disruptive. So
no, I understand.
We're trying to build that within our process.
But is there an estimate of the dollars for each one of these projects to bring it to a halt?
I think the answer is yes, and we'll follow up on that.
Okay, good.
That's Charlie's point about the biggest issues we're dealing with now on projects is where we have done NEPA work that is more than 3 or 4 years old, and we can't move forward because we've got to redo it. That's another thing that this process is we've got to get something going. When we start a project, we continue on. Because what we've done in the past is we get there, and then we get to the point where we've got to go redo all the NEPA work in that regard. So the benefits, if we get this right, guys, the benefits are tremendous. I mean, it really is. Is it going to still be political? Oh, yeah. And is it you have to, sure, does that mean, you know, you're not going to line them up? But at least you're making value judgments. You're saying, why? It's a statewide significance. I know that score is 70. But, you know, when you can take into consideration these other twos, this is why we should do that with this. You know, so that's the type of discussion. Right now, it's, look, quite frankly, it's pretty much the secretary sets down with the commissioner and says, I want these projects. Not quite that simple, but I mean, that's the overriding thing that has been, particularly with the limited amount of funds, right? Because it becomes very, very political. And that's the last, ever since I've been on the board, that's, you know, I guess it's 2008, really. I don't know, in terms of, you know, when we started losing monies, that's what it's become. I mean, there's some attempt at equity, but, you know, quite frankly, it's pretty much what the governor's transportation policies are. And, you know, that's pretty hard to run, you know, programs when these guys, every 4 years, you know, project they funded, you see out there, all of a sudden that's not in the next. Guys, if you would have seen, I know no one, if you drop from the moon and you saw how the projects were allocated under 2313, you know, I would dare say all of you would say, you know, that's not the way that they ought to be allocated. Not be saying it's bad or wrong, I'm just saying, because a lot of them were done to get this vote, to get that vote, to do all this type of stuff. I'm not saying that's wrong. But in terms of, you know, being able to deliver the projects, you know, pretty difficult. So that's what we're trying to get straight. It'll be up to us, and we'll be the ones doing it. So,
you have to. Thank you for explaining the process earlier. I'm going to just pray that I do need anything. I think on a good day, it was complicated enough trying to explain how projects got built. And now we've got this disharmonic convergence of declining revenue that we have to explain and set the table. And then on top of that, we got issues too. There's probably a lot of confusion out there. There's a void, so people speculate. I know our agenda's tight, but it would behoove us, I think, to spend a little time on these talking points or something, so that we come out of here with no more, a little less confusion, because we're a little bit more certain about what we're talking about.
Well, the talking points are going to be, you know, I mean, we're working on them, but not trying to menace, I mean, but you pretty much hit them. I mean, you just said what they were. I mean, we are dealing with divine revenues and House Bill 2 and the exemptions and what we talked about here. I mean, as far as the process, we don't have the detailed process.
And that's good. I mean, just as long as you set expectations, met milestones, we don't have all the answers, but at this point we're going to be doing it. At this point, about next year this time, we'll have.
Well, that's what the October meeting is. So if we set aside the layout, we'll be targeted then as to what the plan would be, at least in broad brush terms, as to how to get these in.
Yes, well, I think transparency is what I hear Matt saying. We all speak from the same book. Whichever deals are just have that transparency.
Who's going to be doing the talking points, Charlie? To work with Tamara?
Yeah, what we'll do is Tamara and staff will work with Nick on those talking points. Again, we're also, I think, a letter to the county, cities, and the NPOs in advance of the public hearings beginning next week to help set expectations. I also think that will be helpful. We'll work on that.
So when would we have that? At the end of this week?
Absolutely.
So in your hands before the public hearing starts?
Oh, absolutely. We're working to get those out before close of business Friday, maybe sooner.
So, and Tamara, are you going to be around the next 2 days?
Yes.
Okay, so if you got comments, guys, we can all talk and work it out. All right, we can continue this discussion. I think the buses are here. And again, we anticipated you'd have these type of questions because, quite frankly, we've been dealing with them. And what we've been trying to do is put some structure around them so when we present them to you that you can have some meaningful discussion in that. So the rest of the afternoon we'll be at the Smart Road. We have a few action items tomorrow, and then of course Jennifer's workshop. But the October meeting will be going to be 2 days, and it's going to be fairly intense. It'll be a lot more detailed. Thanks, hope they're grimacing over that. But I mean, that's what we've talked about. We'll have that. We'll have the P3 recommendations that we'll be talking about. In that regard, so that's why we decided we're going to make that a 2-day meeting.
When is it again?
It's
going to
be October 15th and 16th.
Wednesday, Thursday, 15th, 16th.
Yeah. 15th
and
16th. If I can make one suggestion, I don't want to put too much on Nick and these guys. I would tell you this from just this sort of medium Southwest Virginia perspective. I can't speak to the Bristol district, but the Salem district, Nick's been to the NGO, he's been all over the state talking to people, and that's good. I think
because of what I just now understand is how we're going to set these criteria. In other words, each score, each construction district will have their own scoring criteria, and the points will be, if I have a project that will get scored according to the Salem district criteria, and if Dixon has a project that will be scored this same criteria, it would be very important for us to have input into Nick as to what we think we're waiting on it before we get into a middle of a 2-day meeting where we got to hash it out.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Freeland, yes. Now, we've also been telling a lot of the MPOs that we would like for them to start having that discussion at that regional level as well, so we can bring to you all kind of the input from your communities to what they think is important. Yeah. That's part of the dialogue.
But you only have 30 days.
Well, we're not going to have it all done. But, I mean, we're going to be laying out the plan, and I'm sure it'll be a continued discussion.
I guess where I'm going, if until we put deadlines and we're going to have something done by X, we're going to keep talking.
And that's what we're going to give you in September. Now, moving to October, let me tell you what let's take Hampton Road. You have to determine if each construction district may have rural and urban projects.
Yeah.
So in other words, it won't be led by the construction.
Oh, it won't be. Okay.
No, it'll be it could, in Hampton Roads, they have both urban and rural projects. It'll be in that construction district how you want it weighted, depending on if it's an urban or a rural project.
So Roanoke City would compete and be scored, projects in Roanoke City would be scored on the same criteria as projects in the city of Richmond.
That's right. Possibly. That's right.
Because the city's weightings by district.
Excuse me?
Because there's going to be more than one.
Yeah, it's basically urban versus rural.
I know that. District by district.
Yeah, because.
So you may have a different weighting schedule in Hampton Roads than you would in.
Not for an urban project.
So
it's an urban project would be rated this way. It's a rural project, but in your district, you'll have urban and rural projects.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Freeland.
So we'll be setting the weighting by district. It will all be the same weighting.
That's correct. I mean,
we've got different sizes of cities. I mean, I've got the city of Bedford, right? Well, it's turning now into a town. But there's cities of that size all around, and that's an urban, right? Because it's a city, right?
That's what it means.
Okay, all right. That's the kind of stuff we need to work on with.
So Mr. Chairman, Mr. Freeland, at the next meeting, we're going to walk through the deadlines for House Bill 2 process and moving forward to get your input and your concurrence on that. We're also going to talk not about the specific weighting for a given district or region within a district, but concepts about how that could be done. So, for example, in some of the discussions we've had, I've heard similar things from Lynchburg and Rona, and those things are more alike than they are from some of the feedback I've gotten from other parts of your district.
Right.
And so there's things where perhaps those two areas within those different districts may have a similar weighting criteria, while the more rural parts of those two districts may have a similar weighting criteria. And again, that is going to be a decision for this board. The staff are going to discuss ways we could look at that. We're going to take your feedback, and then we're going to go follow your direction as to how we further develop that.
Sir, it goes a little bit more here is by district. I mean, it's going to be one sign. It's way, right? When we have a rural project across the Commonwealth on this way, or an urban project.
That's what this was.
I would hope so.
That's correct. In other words, but you determine if it's an rural route or a rural project.
I'm hesitant to get back in here. The code said by construction district.
That's right, by construction district.
So that's what House Bill 2 said.
But by construction district, either by urban or, in other words, but the intent is, we'll come back, we'll get to, but I mean,
you got work.
You got urban projects ought to be compared across the state,
right.
Rural projects compared across the state. Right. At the construction district, you determine if it's urban or rural.
And, Mr. Chairman, the thing I would just say to members of the board is we'll have much more details, graphics, slides, and other things that can really structure this discussion more in October.
Well, and that's great. I do think that in October we all try to approve the timeline.
and put some deadlines and figure out exactly what we're going to have to place. Because as you can see, just from this board, there's a lot of interest. But as Dixon was saying, there, you talk to contractors, you talk, I mean, everybody across the transportation spectrum knows that these criteria are going to be really, really important.
Well, the idea is to compare projects, just keep the overall, compare projects, whether it's a small district, a rural project in rural Bristol, a very large district on projects in Northern Virginia, and have a way to compare to say what is the next incremental dollar that ought to be spent. Not because it's a bigger project, but that's the intent. But that's what we're trying to do, is to not give anybody advantage, but to say we're being consistent on how we're comparing dollars across the state. That's what it's meant to do. Talk about how we, the best way to do it, but that's what the full intent is.
All right, last one, and then we're going to have to get.
This has been an enlightening discussion because I'm more confused than ever. But so we're saying if, and this is for instance in urban, if congestion mitigation is 60% of the score, it's going to be 60% of the score in every urban area.
Mr. Cole, that is a decision for the board to make. And the staff will come back with some discussions about structures. The law, as Mr. Fralin knows, does have some parameters around that, but those decisions rest with this body. The staff, based on the feedback that we're getting, are going to come to you not with specifically how it should be done in various areas, but different constructs under which we can do that to get your feedback on.
Yeah, but the idea is not for you to figure out how the best way to score can you get everybody else. My idea is to be a consistent across the college. That's what the idea is.
Yes.
I understand. But I mean, hypothetically, if you have an urban project, theoretically, they ought to be scored similar. If you have a rule, theoretically, they ought to be scored similar. That's really what, that's what it's on. But you have, there's legal settlement. And by the way, remember at the end, it still doesn't mean if it doesn't score an X that you can't fund
it. You just got to get eight votes. You run the risk of defending.
That's right, dude. You run the risk of defending. Why? That's exactly what it is. It still comes down to get seven votes to the secretary or eight votes.
Right.
You know, and if it's a two and that's what eight people want to do, that's what gets funded. So, this is again not.
Then there'll be another bill that says you shall.
Well, that's that we're dealing with that in Northern Virginia. That's but that's not the intent. I think if we basically, but look, it's like our disclosure laws in the state, which we ad nauseum have had to deal with the last few years. The issue is for the public to understand how we're allocating these monies, just like how it's influencing, how we're doing these monies. That's what Woolley House Bill 2 is trying to do. It's not meant to be take all the thought out of it, you put it in a computer, and you spit these out, and you say, well, that's what we're doing. No, you will come down to there's going to have to be some equity. I'm sure there's a lot of judgment calls. But the issue is to say how you went through the process, and this is how we why we decided. That's really what it's trying to do. Okay. With that enlightening discussion, Jennifer, you want to give us a break to tell us quickly what our logistics are the rest of the afternoon? Is that Jennifer?
Yeah. All right, quick logistics. When we leave this room, we're going to go down the stairs and through the big glass doors. There's buses there that are ready to take you.
Are there restrooms on the way, by the way?
They're right out here in the hall.
After the restrooms.
There's no restroom on the bus. You're going to go to the Smart Road. You're going to have a tour of the Smart Road facility. Lunches will be brought out there for you to have on the return trip. For those of you that are taking tours this afternoon with our group, either the bus tour, the walking tour, or the bike tour, those tours leave at 2 o'clock. They also leave from the area that you're going to go meet the bus to go to the Smart Road. So that those tours will get back by 5, and then
evening logistics, we're going to meet our bus transportation to the reception in the same place where you're going to get the bus transportation in just a few minutes. They'll take us over to the transportation museum, and that's where our reception is tonight. They'll also return us.
If you get lost, we're supposed to be get on that bus at what time?
5:30.
Why
don't we
probably give everybody 10 minutes. Yeah. I mean, I think we take our tile. It's 11:02. Why don't we say 11:15 at the bus in the lobby? And wait, you want, I think this afternoon's casual.
Yes.
You want to take the ties off, you got to enjoy your room and do whatever.
Oh, yes, everybody's.